There is.
Okay,
we are on a Kuf Tet Amud Beis.
It's an important matter of always talk. It's only time to talk.
Why don't we...
What is this?
You were in the house.
Almonds?
You're milking.
Yomi Schwartz showed me something interesting in the Aruch HaShulchan on Shabbos. In the Hilchos Bein Amtzarim, the Aruch HaShulchan says how terrible it is that people are mezalzel in the minog of not eating fleishichs during the 9 days, which he says b'sach hakol is only 8 days that you have to give up fleishichs. So good, is it only 8 days because one day is Shabbos, so you get off? Although this year, we have two Shabbatot, so you get two days off.
No, because that's the Yom Kippur.
What do you mean, Yom Kippur, Sudat Mafsekit?
Sudat
Mafsekit
is also Fleishik.
No. That's on Erev Yom Kippur.
Could be
this year, there is no Sudat Mafsekit because Erev Tisha B'Av is on Shabbos.
And
so you have Shalashudas. Technically, you could have Fleishichs at Shalashudas. But in a normal year, when Tisha B'Av is not on a Sunday, so Sudas HaMafseket is not B'Seri, Adraba. So he says, how hard is it to give up eating meat for 8 days? He says 8 days, not 9 days. Because is it 8 days? Because anyway, Tisha B'Av is a fast day, so you don't eat. He's talking about Shabbos you get off, and this you get off two Shabbos. And he says, two remarkable things. This custom, this practice of not eating fleishichs during the 9 days, down the block, are they eating fleishichs?
Probably if they hold that, if they're
Sephardi, man.
Well, they are Sephardi. Your daughter's a Sephardi now.
They're not open.
Right.
There isn't.
So the Sephardim, well, no, well, that's a machlokas. This year, is there or isn't there a Shavuot Shechalbo? Well, that's a machlokas. Tisha B'Av is technically Shabbos.
Right.
When Tisha B'Av is, yeah, but when it's a Nidche, does it mean that this whole week is a Shavuot Shechalbo? Or, and it's when Tisha B'Av is Mamish on Sunday, not a Nidche, so there's no Shavuot Shechalbo. When Tisha B'Av is on Shabbos and it's Nidche to Sunday, so it's a Machlokas HaPoskim, if this preceding week has the din of Shavuot Shechalbo or not. So for Sfardim, who eat meat during the 9 days but not during Shavuot Shechalbo, that's a big nafka minim. But at the Bar Mitzvah on Friday,
that was Rosh Chodesh,
is
one of the first days of the
9 days. No, and it's Rosh Chodesh. Ashkenazim don't eat meat on Rosh Chodesh. It's one of the 9 days. No, there was no meat. But they could have served meat to the Sephardi friends, to his side of the family. They could have divided up the room. They had a kurata machitza, bagels and cream cheese for Ashkenazim.
They should have divided up the room between dats and bagels.
They could have divided it into four quarters. Right.
And vegetarian.
But this practice of not eating meat during the 9 days, the origin is not very clear. If you look in the writings of Professor Sperber, you'll see he even suggests it may be, you have to check to see, I'm not sure if he uses the word minag ta'ut, but basically that's what he says. But the Aruch HaShulchan, sensitive to the fact that the source of the idea of not eating meat for 9 days is a little sketchy, says that it's even more important than a minug, because it has now the din of a neder. So it's d'oraisa not to eat meat during that. It's hard to tell if he's being serious.
Who made the neder?
The Am Yisrael.
Why is this a neder as opposed to every other minhag that's not?
Because
we call neder, so we're all set.
Let me, if you recall, if you recall when the seder, siyum is always part of the idea that there's ways out of this. So he says this idea that it's a neder in the same way that there are all types of practices that the Jewish people took upon themselves en masse, like kitniot, right? So it has the force of a neder, and the dar madiraisa. So you have this minog. It's not even a mitzvah derabonin. It's a minog that takes on this force of the power. It's hard to say whether he really means this literally or he's polemicizing. But then he says something even more. He says, and it's even more embarrassing. First of all, it's interesting to think that in Russia, in the 19th century, people were not careful about this.
It wasn't just a question of probably your meat.
Yeah, schmaltz was the big thing. You know, this was the difference from where you came from. You could tell where somebody came from based upon what cooking oil they use. Western Europe used butter. Eastern Europe used schmaltz.
And Southern Europe used olive oil.
And Southern Europe and Sephardim used olive oil. So depending upon how you tell me what your sufganiya is, and I'll tell you where your grandmother came from. So he says, and it's even more embarrassing that people aren't careful about this practice of not eating meat when you look at those goyim. Those goyim, they fast and they all those days where they're vegan. He doesn't use the word vegan, but he says they don't eat meat, they don't eat milk, they don't eat eggs, they don't eat cheese as part of their religious fasts. I didn't know what he was talking about. So Lent. What are the Christians that do for Lent? So the Christians don't eat meat on Fridays during Lent. But then Yoni and I figured it out. Yoni, not the whole year round, but during the period of Lent, they don't eat it. So, but in the Eastern Orthodox Church, that's in the Roman Catholic Church, but in the Russian Orthodox Church, where the Aruch HaShulchan was, Lent is much more machmir. And during their Lent, they have all of these fasts where basically you don't eat meat, but you just eat vegetables or something. I guess they had parv borscht or something. No. It's not that they were fast, but they were fast. There were fasts that were fasts where they didn't eat anything. And then the rest of the time, there are these fast meat fasts or animal product fasts. So he says, look at them. They give up, and we just have to give meat. They give up everything. He says, how crazy. And he basically looks at the vegans and he says, how meshuga is that? What mesiras nefesh that must be. And they do it. So if they do it, kal vachomer, we should be able to manage for just 8 days. Not to eat.
In Europe, it wasn't such a hardship because they didn't even have that much meat to eat.
Yeah, but they had. He's talking about. And as he's talking for the Jews.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, but apparently they.
From what he was saying, maybe they had a little bit of meat on Shabbos and for Sukkot.
Well,
but from what the Archbishop
was saying, it sounds like they didn't. According to the Archbishop, they ate meat, but maybe again, maybe David's point is correct. They ate a lot of schmaltz.
I don't know, is that really.
Meaning they use schmaltz to cook other things in. So, I don't know. I'm not sure. I'm not sure that it's true, this idea that we have that they were all starving to death, they had no meat there.
Also, he wasn't living in the 1700s. He was living already in the 1900s. It was a little bit different reality.
There's also the question is, how much dairy product did he have? Like, I was talking to my father-in-law.
Have you made a nice living as a milkman?
They had milk. Like, I was talking to my father-in-law on Shabbos. We were here for Shabbos. And he's like, we... Like William and I, we eat all
your
my
father-in-law
day.
Was not from Eastern Europe.
No, my father-in-law. But he said, but it has goes back to the history of the fact that, like, outside of milk, what dairy products did we have? There was no hard cheese, there was no soft cheese, there was no cottage cheese.
In Europe, there were soft cheeses, for sure.
Okay.
For sure.
I don't know.
They had butter, they had cheeses, they had some cream cheese.
I've been used to the Encyclopedia of Jewish Food by Gil Marx. Everything we've talked about, it's all in there, explained in depth.
No, they definitely.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway, Kaftar Amud Beis. Where we left off last week. You see, it's, I don't know. 14 lines from the bottom. The last words on the line are Omer Rabbi Yitzchak. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak Nafacha. What kind of last name is that? Yeah, but apparently it's... How does he communicate it? Napacha? Yeah. In yeshiva you say Nafcha. But he was what? Where do you get a last name like that?
He was a
Smith.
Isaac Smith.
Rosh Chodesh Adar Shechaliot b'Shabbat Motziin Shalosh Torot, and you have three kugels. V'Karin Bahen Echad b'Inyonei Shel Yom V'Echad b'Shel Rosh Chodesh V'Echad b'Chitisa. Why? Because it's Shabbos, and it's you read the parsha. The Inyonei D'Yome is the parsha of Shavua, and Rosh Chodesh and Kitisa and Parshat Shkalim. In other words, we've already established that the correct kriya for Shkalim is Kitisa and not the kriya from Parshas Pinchas. V'amar Rabbi Yitzchak Nefacha Rosh Chodesh Tevet Shechaliot b'Shabbat Mevi'in Mevi'in Shalosh Torot V'korin Behen Echad Binyanei Shel Yom V'Echad B'Rosh Chodesh V'Echad B'Chanukah. Because Rosh Chodesh Tevet is always on Chanukah. Rosh Chodesh Tevet, it doesn't always come out on Shabbos.
But it has to come out
during Chanukah. Rosh Chodesh Tevet is sometimes 1 day, sometimes 2 days. Which is an important fact to remember. Because that means that the date of the last day of Chanukah is a movable feast. Right. So my nephew was born on the last day. I always celebrate his birthday on the last day of Hanukkah. He was born on the last day of Hanukkah for years. They didn't know what his Hebrew... In other words, you didn't need to remember what your Hebrew birthday... And sometimes you remember the Hebrew birthday because you remember the date. And so if you're born on... Hoshana Rabbah, right? So you remember your birthday is Hoshana Rabbah. And most people would have to count on their fingers to know what the actual date of Hoshana Rabbah is. Right? You know the first day of Sukkot is Tevav, so you can count and figure it out. But it's easier to remember your birthday is Hoshana Rabbah. My daughter was born on Christmas. Yeah.
The Gregorian calendar or the...
According to the Roman ritual. So even though none of the kids... That's like one of the nice things of living. We celebrate the kids' Hebrew birthdays. I don't even consciously know their English birthdays. Like, if I have to, like, fill out the tu'umas or something, so, like, I can usually remember it out. But I remember... The date that I remember is the Hebrew birthday. It happens that tomorrow is Shalom's English birthday, right? Which we only... Just now, as I was leaving the house, we realized that he's coming home from Gaza. It happens to be his English birthday, so we figured we'll do something because we missed his Hebrew birthday. But...
He's 19?
He's 21. But you have a kid born on Christmas, so what can you do? We all have that chutz laretz mentality, no matter how long we're living here. You remember what the date of Christmas is. If you live in America, it doesn't matter. Even if you live in Borough Park, you know what the date of Christmas is. There's no way around it. So, because you have to know when Nittle is, that's right. So they remembered his birthday is the last day of Hanukkah, and they were unaware that some years they were celebrating his birthday on the wrong date. Some days his birthday, he was actually born on Gimel. The year he was born, there was only one day Rosh Chodesh. His actual birthday is Gimel Tevet. So his birthday was... Yeah, I mean, it could be that it wasn't on time, so it didn't matter, right?
My mother was born...
No. If it was Gimel... 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. It was the 9th of Tevet.
My mother was born in the 8th day of Hanukkah.
Uh-huh. Beis Tevet. So Beis Tevet is not always the 8th day of Hanukkah. Sometimes...
Not normally it is.
It depends whether there's one day Rosh Chodesh or two. Most of the time it's 2 days Rosh Chodesh.
I think it's almost 50-50.
So some days it's the last day of Hanukkah, some days it's the day before the last day of Hanukkah. If depending on whether there's one day of Rosh Chodesh or not. That would be a perfect example. Somebody remembers that Yahrzeit on the last day of Hanukkah, so they always say Kaddish on the last day of Hanukkah, and half the time they're saying it technically on the wrong date. Not that it really matters in Shemayim.
It doesn't happen that often.
According to our expert on the calendar, it's about 50-50.
Really? I always celebrate Beis Tevet regardless of what day of Hanukkah.
Right, but a lot of people, but you're tuned in, you are tuned in to the Hebrew calendar. And maybe in your shul, they also send you an email.
they do that too.
Oh, wow.
But a lot of people, a reminder email and also a link to make a donation. Yeah. But a lot of people would just remember, that Yard Side and last day of Hanukkah, and half the time they would be saying it on the wrong date. I was thinking of you, actually, because, you know, they discovered 10 more moons around Jupiter.
I've lost track.
So how many moons does Jupiter have now?
80.
Anybody else want to take a guess? 79. 79 moons. So
they're not all named.
Well, they just discovered 10 of them now. 79 moons. So Lonnie said, imagine every day you have Rosh Chodesh twice. but one thing they discovered is the inner, there's two like rings of moons. Mm-hmm. The inner moons move clockwise when looking from above, you know, in sync with the planet. The outer moons are spinning in the other direction, except for one of these new moons they discovered, which is kind of like driving in the wrong lane. So how is it that moon has not crashed into another moon these many 5,778 years that it's been spinning?
You know, like there's two sets, but each moon has, you know, just like the solar system, each moon is, they're not in the same orbit, each moon has to be farther out than the others, otherwise they would have crashed, even if they're going in the same direction.
I think the spaces are much greater than we imagine them to be. We think about, like, you know, the asteroid belt as being like, you know, you're like in Star Wars, you're crashing in, and you couldn't see anything from, you know,
they have gravity. If they were close together, then they would have crashed by now. They're millions of miles apart.
Okay, anyway. So Rosh Chodesh, Hanukkah, also you take out three Sefer Torah. There's an interesting thing here. When he tells you the halacha about Rosh Chodesh Adar, he says, Motzi'in Shalosh Torot. When he says the halacha about Rosh Chodesh Tevet, he says, Mevi'in Shalosh Torot. Why might that be? The printer got bored.
Yeah, there are other differences too. I mean, I don't know, this is less significant, but it says, Rosh Chodesh Adar, it says, Chad Bishel Rosh Chodesh, and Rosh Chodesh Tevet, Chad Dir Rosh Chodesh.
Normally we say Motzi'in, Hotsa'at Sefer Torah. Kishinich Nasadar? Yeah. Nichnas and Motzi. Why is that different than Mevi? Mevi, Motzi, Nichnas, they're all synonyms.
You have to do the fact that on Hanukkah you're reading for Parashas Shkolim, you're reading on how they counted the skull.
Yeah.
For Hanukkah you're reading about what they brought to the Beis Hamikdash. Happy why?
Oh. That's an interesting,
The most inspiring answer? The Steinzel here says that there's Kitveyad that have Mivin for both.
Say it again.
There's Kitveyad that have Mivin for both.
Who was the typo?
Okay. David's a killjoy. Okay, so it's true that this is probably a manuscript matter. But that doesn't stop the Jewish imagination from trying to. Vitzricha. Now the Gemara says he needed to state this halacha both about Rosh Chodesh Adar and about Rosh Chodesh Tevet. D'i itmar baha baha ka'amar Rabbi Yitzchak. If he had only said it about one of them, you might have thought he was only talking about that one. It's if he told you the halacha about Rosh Chodesh Adar, you might have thought that this idea of bringing three Sifrei Torah was only about Rosh Chodesh Adar. Aval Bahach Kirav. But on the other one, it wouldn't have been like that. Now, as if he had said it about Rosh Chodesh Adar, you might have thought that Rosh Chodesh Tevet.
You don't.
You wouldn't have had all three, and vice versa.
No, I understand, but.
And you would have thought the halacha was like Rav, who said, "Parshat Shkalim et Korbani Lachmi uveshtei Torot Sagi." Right. In other words, because he had a different learning from Parshat Shkalim. Komash Malan? No, you need. He needed to state the halacha in both cases, so you wouldn't come to that false havamida. Valema havalo boi hach. So adarabba. So then say the halacha about Parshat Shkalim. But if we would have only taught the halacha about Chanukah, so I might have thought Parshat Shkalim you used two Sefer Torah. Right. I wouldn't have been able to extrapolate the Seder. Say the opposite. In other words, they have this idea that there's no unnecessary word in the Torah. But they also thought, like, it wouldn't be worth Rav Yitzchak's time to add an extra half a sentence. He's a busy guy, right? He was also an Amora, and he was also like running the blacksmith. The Gemara is busy, so it's not necessary. So he says, no. So say it only about Chanukah, about Adar, and from that we would learn out Chanukah. So Chada Michlal Chaverta Itmar. So he says, Enochinami. That's what he did. In other words, Rav Yitzchak was too busy. He didn't have to spell out both sides of the coin. Right? And Chanukah could have been learned out from Adar. But Adar might not have been able to be learned out from Chanukah. But we spelled it out for you. In other words, we told you both sides of the coin, even though it's implicit. Itmar. Here's a perfect example of what I always say. Itmar is one of those technical terms. What does Itmar mean as a technical term?
Machloket.
Which kind of machloket? Yafeh. Itmar always introduces a machloket amorayim. Except for when it doesn't. In other words, the technical terms, metve, reminhu, tashma, Kamash Malon. These are technical terms. The word is not a word, it's a signpost. It's there to alert you to a structure in the Gemara. But as Sigmund told us, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. In other words, sometimes the word is also used in its regular sense. And here, what do you have here? Look at the page. You have two words in a row. What are the two words in a row? Itmar, itmar. Now there's a period between those two words. How does Strandzels punctuate it? There's a period between the two words?
There's a whole paragraph.
Oh, he starts a whole new paragraph. Okay. Yeah. But there's at least a period between the two worlds. Right? In the first itmar, he's using it in the colloquial sense, in the conventional sense. Right? Itmar just means it was stated. But then the second itmar is the technical term. It means here's a machloket amaroyim.
You should have put in a hashtag.
Hashtag it, right? Exactly. In other words, in some future printing of the Gemara, all the technical terms will be
emojis.
Will be signaled with a hashtag.
I'll just have emojis.
Yes, I guess you could. Itmar Rosh Chodesh Tevet Shechaliot Bechol. When Rosh Chodesh Tevet comes out on one of the days of Chanukah, Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, Karu Tlata beRosh Chodesh, veChad beChanukah. V'Rav Dimi, deMincheifa Amar, Karu Tlata beChanukah, veChad beRosh Chodesh. How many aliyahs do you have on Rosh Chodesh? How many aliyahs do you have on Chanukah?
Three.
So on Rosh Chodesh Chanukah, we take out two Sefer Torah. But how do you divide up the leaning? I see you looked ahead. Well, then you must remember this from the last time you learned the Gemara. Okay. Look ahead a half line.
Because Tade was in Zvachim.
Oh, you learned the Daf Yomi. So Mr. Hertzfeld points out to the... Well, we'll see in a second. But in other words, what's the point? In other words, on Rosh Chodesh and Hanukkah, you have two lanings that you have to accomplish. It's not just a question of which should go first and which should go second, but how do you divide up the aliyahs? So it assumes that whatever you read first gets three aliyahs, and whatever you read second is you pack into one aliyah. Well, that's a machlokas about how to read the how you divide up the aliyahs. We learned this a few weeks ago. Yes? Well, a few months ago. About how you divide up the psukim. So according to the widespread practice of the Vilna Gaon, because remember there was the issue of you can't stop in proximity to the end of a parasha, a parasha break, the visual breaks in the Torah. So there's only a few number of psukim, so you have to read and you have to go back so that you read one pasuk twice, so that it's the end of one aliyah and the beginning of the other aliyah, so that it covers all the bases. But that's when you try to divide into four aliyahs. So if Rosh Chodesh is read as one aliyah, there's no problem. If you're dividing it into three aliyahs, there's also no problem because you have more space to work with. The problem comes when you try to divide that short laning into four aliyahs, and then there's not enough psukim to go around, so you have to double up one pasuk into two aliyahs. That's the opinion of the Gro. That's what we do here. Yeah. So there's Rosh Chodesh Chanukah during the week. So what goes first, Rosh Chodesh or Chanukah? So the Gemara says, Omer of Mani, Kevate de Reb Yitzchak Nafcha. Mistabra, in other words, so he says the halacha is like Reb Yitzchak, who says, you read three for Rosh Chodesh, one for Chanukah. What's the halacha? What do we do?
Sounds right.
What? Yeah, that's what we do, like Reb Yitzchak. So he says, that's what you do. Why? Todir v'sheino todir. Todir kodim. You have this general principle of halachic poker. You know what halachic poker is? Saul, would you please explain to us how the hands of poker work?
How the hands of poker, how halachic poker works?
No, poker. Full house, straight flush.
You have a pair, then you have two pairs, and then you have three of a kind, and then you have...
Straight?
No, then you have a full house. Oh. And then you have a four of a kind, and then you have a straight, and then you have a flush, and then you have a flush straight, and then you have a royal flush. And then you have a royal flush straight.
You hear that, Steve? If you were here, you could have answered that question. Let's see if he's listening. Meaning there's a precedent, there's an order of what has a higher hand than the other. So if you have two mitzvot in conflict, usually it's not a question of you have two mitzvot, you can only do one of them. Although sometimes that's the case.
Haftorah.
You have two haftorot that have a claim on this week. Generally, we only do one. According to some customs, you do both. That's not a very popular, you open up the sitter. Like when we were kids, we had like the Hertz Chumash. Right, and the haftorah was whatever the haftorah said, because we didn't know there was Sephardim in the world. I mean, growing up, I didn't know any Sephardim. No, I didn't know. I just didn't know them. There were none in our shul. I didn't.
Was it a new invention, though?
No, they just weren't hanging around suburban New Jersey. I mean, if they were, they were like Maranos. They were in hiding.
They were on the coast, I think, of New Jersey.
They were down the shore. I didn't know about Diel. When I was, I'm talking when I was a public school student and I used to go to shul, I didn't know about Diel. Diel was like the dark side of the moon to me. Later, I discovered Diel, and it happened. My parents moved down there, and I got to know them.
In my minyan, we just do the short haftorah every time.
Right. No. So, and as now you look in the Korin Sidur, and it says there's two haftorahs. Ashkenazim matchil po, right from here to here. Svardim matchilim po. Right. It almost every. And they don't indicate the Yemenite haftorah.
But also has like a totally different haftorah.
But there's like one example where it's reversed, where we get off easy. There's a shorter Ashkenazi haftorah than the right. So and they get to eat the kitniot, but they gotta soon. They already the slichot are starting soon.
And Halav Melchui, it's not there. Some people have a hard time with it.
Yeah. So on the assumption that, you know, there's going to have to be a conflict, so how do you, which has a stronger hand, which Haftarah goes first, which, but a lot of times it's not a question of one or the other. It's a question of which takes precedent, right? What's the aesthetic? What's the ethic of who goes through the door first? You know, like you'd always open a door for a lady. You should always let a lady go through the door first. Except when? No, when you're going through a revolving door. The etiquette is that if you're going through a revolving door, the gentleman should go first because he has to do the pushing. The halacha is always concerned with these things. Right? There's a story about Rav Kook. Rav Kook once comes to visit Agnon. And when they dedicate, you know, the Shai Agnon Shul, what's called today the Shai Agnon Shul, when it was dedicated, so Rav Kook came to the Chanukah Rabayit. And then after, Agnon invited him to come for, I don't know, a cup of tea or something. So they get to the house, and they come to the door, and...
Wait, what shul
is that?
The Shai Agnon Shul in Arnona?
What
Rav Kook?
Rav Avraham Yitzchak HaKohen Kook, the Rav Rashi.
But the shul in Arnona was dedicated many years later.
No, it was dedicated in the 30s.
Oh.
And then... they didn't finish building it. Mm-hmm. And the building laid fallow. And then during the British took it over. The British took it over as a...
same location?
Yeah, that same. Yeah. I'm sure, I don't know if the building looked exactly the way it does today, but okay. Whatever the original... No, it wasn't really used as a shul. It never really had an opportunity. And the British took it over and used it as like a machsan or something, I don't know exactly. And then later, after Qom HaMdina, they took it back and they made it into a proper working shul, which it remains to this day. And then when Agnon died, they renamed it in his honor. If you know that book, what's his name? Gafni has those books about all the neighborhoods, the synagogues in all the different neighborhoods. You know that series from Yad Ben Svi? It's a very good series about the history of the neighborhoods and, you know, the shuls and things like that. So in there he describes a little thing. Anyway, so Rav Kook comes back to Agnon's house. And they get to the door, and Agnon says, B'vach kasha. Right? And your guest comes to your house. So Rav Kook reminded him, the Gemara says no. The Gemara says that when a balabayit and a guest come to the house, the balabayit has to go in first. Because maybe while they weren't home, Ganavim came.
Oh, I thought it was because it was like skewed issues.
What?
I heard no, stuff no, was no, no, like
no,
if
no. Yeah, because the wife. No, no, if you come and there's nobody home. If while you were gone, the Ganavim came and stole everything, so if the guest goes in first and you see that, I don't know, some expensive item is gone, the Balabayit might suspect that the guest pocketed it before the Balabayit entered. So Rav Kook tells him, there's a din, the guest has to go in. So,
no, the owner has to.
The owner has to go in first. So Agnon said, I'm not choshed that you're going to steal from me. So Rav Kook said, doesn't matter, it's a din. The same thing we have the same idea, the precedent of who one person is walking into the shul and one person is walking out of the shul. Who takes precedent? The person going in. Why? One is ratzim la mitzvah and one is ratzim mi mitzvah. Right, so the person, and the same thing. Two people are walking into shul at the same time, and one has a safe. If it's a safe Torah, but even if it's just got a chumash, right? So the guy with the guy carrying a mitzvah object, he has precedent. You know, like the same idea of like, you know, the two. No, the agalat tu'una, what the Chazon Ish told.
Everything.
Yeah, absolutely. What Chazon Ish told about, look, the halacha has an opinion about what should it tie first. Right,
it's so very strong opinion.
So Chazon Ish and Ben Gurion, you know, Gemara says if you have two donkeys or two wagons, you know, going on a road, and there's no, who has the right of way? So if one wagon is loaded and the other wagon is empty, the loaded wagon takes precedence. So that's what the Chazon Ish said to Ben Gurion. Says you guys have to defer to us. because we are the laden wagon. We're carrying the Masorah with us, and you are just a bunch of empty wagons. So Ben Gurion said, right. So Ben Gurion said, sure, you go first, because Ben Gurion figured another 10 years you guys will be out of business, right? What difference does it make? Haha, joke was on him.
And now the image is flipped to large.
Yes, yes.
Who's going to disappear in 10 years?
No, I meant the image of the wagon.
Of who's carrying the carrying the burden of Achaius for the Jewish state? So anyway, this idea that we have these so Todir Vesheno Todir Todir Kodem is what's the most practical application of Todir Vesheno Todir in our lives? Talisman Tefillin. You come to shul in the morning, in one little pekel, you have two mitzvahs, you have to do, which do you do first? So if you didn't know about this, imagine for a second you landed from Mars, you don't know anything about this din. You never heard of Tadir Vesheno Tadir. What does the word Tadir mean?
Frequent.
What's a teder in modern Hebrew? A frequency, meaning like a radio frequency. You see how these...
Tamid is a... Actually, we don't translate accurately.
What?
Tamid, I think we don't translate accurately.
Tamid didn't
usually mean always. It meant regularly.
Regularly.
The Korban Tamid was not always, it was regularly.
Right. So you landed from Mars, you have Talisman Tefillin. What would you think goes first? Seda, you know that much. Why would you think tefillin?
It's holier.
It's under the tefillin.
Yeah. But no, Tadir Vesheno. Why? Because we do.
Because it's easier to point your talus.
No, not because it's easier. Not because it's easier. Because talus is an everyday mitzvah 365 days a year. And tefillin is only on your mechol.
No, I'm saying if I just landed from Mars, I would say, technically speaking, it would probably be easier if you put it on my talus and then put on my tefillin. The other way around.
What?
Well, think about it. You got your arms all this, and you got to go over and under.
But Todeh Vesheno Todeh says if you have two mitzvot, and one is a more frequent mitzvah and one is a less frequent mitzvah, the more frequent mitzvah goes first. The Gemara in Brachos, that we learned many years ago, about in the fourth parak, about Ad Vad Bechlal or Ad Velo Ad Bechlal. You remember that Gemara? I'll say it's a famous Gemara. But it's a Gemara that you should know. When the Gemara,
usually
in the beginning of... when the Gemara is trying to figure out the Sof Zmanei Tefillah, Tefillat HaShachar Ad Chatzot Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ad Arba Shaot. So Rabbi Yehuda says that you can daven Shachar until the fourth hour. What does that mean? Does it mean up to the fourth hour of the day and including the fourth hour? Meaning, on a perfect day, when sunrise is at 6 a.m. and sunset is at 6 p.m., and every sha'az manit is 1 hour, so that the clocks align. So the first hour begins at 6, 7, 8, 9. So the fourth hour is between what we call 9 and 10 a.m. So when we say you can daven until the fourth hour, does it mean the deadline for prayer is 9 a.m.? Or is it 9:59? Right? Is it ad... The ad bechlal to and including that whole fourth hour, or only up to that fourth. So when the Gemara is trying to figure this out, it plays around with a whole variety of thought experiments. So the Gemara tells us there's a halacha of what to do if you find yourself faced with having to choose what to daven first, musaf or mincha. So the possibility that you could be faced with such a dilemma is only according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that Musaf can only be davened up until the seventh hour. The seventh hour is between 12 noon and 1 p.m. What's the earliest time to daven Mincha? What? No, I don't know. No. What on the halachic clock? When does what is mincha gedola is the earliest time to daven mincha? Is 12:30 on the perfect day, meaning 6.5 sunlight hours into the day, which when 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. are sunrise and sunset, that's 12:30.
There's a little overlap.
What?
There's half an hour overlap.
So there's a half an hour overlap where mincha and musaf can conflict, and you have to choose, what do I do first? But only according to the opinion that it is ad v'ad bichlal. Because if it's ad v'lo ad bichlal, if it's up to the seventh hour but not including the seventh hour, then the deadline for musaf is noon. And then you have a... What? No, the deadline for musaf. The deadline, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that you can daven musaf until the seventh hour. If that means up to but not including the seventh hour, then on our perfect day, the deadline is noon. You can't daven mincha until 12:30. So there's no scenario by which you have to choose what do you do first. They never coincide. So from this, you have to say what? It must be ad v'ad bichlal. No, because there has to be a scenario. It's a given that... Right? There has to be some overlap. Now, it happens, we don't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda in general. We paskin like the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama says that Musaf can be davened until when? Until sunset. So that the deadline for Musaf and the deadline for Mincha are the same. If the deadline for Musaf and the deadline for Mincha are the same, sunset, and for some reason you haven't yet davened, normally it doesn't happen, because normally we daven Musaf Friday after Shacharis, long before it's Mincha time. But if for some reason you didn't daven Musaf, you were busy saving lives. Why are you always so pessimistic? Or it's Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur, when sometimes that chazin goes on real long. And it could happen you don't start Musaf before Chatzot. So then what should you do? Why should you daven Mincha first? Tadir v'she'eno tadir tadir kodim. Right?
Well, there are things that override that.
There are things that override it.
So that was a machloket for Motzei Shabbat Chanukah.
Correct.
Or like,
yes. Correct. What?
At home, they always say, there's no.
In Eretz Yisrael, we don't make Abdullah in shul. Just like we don't make Kiddush in shul. There are very few. So it's. You do like Hanukkah candles, but you're not confronted with the conflict because it's not Havdalah versus Hanukkah candles, it's only Hanukkah candles. But when you get home, what do? So you do Havdalah first.
Anyway, we're not as makbid today in general. I mean, what? We, my family, or us, people don't seem to be as makbid about lighting Hanukkah candles as soon as,
In my house, we are makbid.
But you find that the idea of lotich le'regel b'neshuk is something that used to be really, people go to sleep when it got dark, and now
yes.
You have less
to worry about. Tadir v'she'eno tadir kodem applies when you're dealing with two mitzvot with the same deadline, meaning all things being equal. But all things are not always equal. So if the deadline for one is what's called a mitzvah overet, and the other is what's called a mitzvah she'eno overet, one, the deadline is fast approaching, and the other, you still have time. So then, that principle overrides tadir v'she'eno tadir tadir kodim. In which case, what should you do on Motzei Shabbos Chanukah? Candles first. Why? Because what's the deadline for candles? L'chol ha'deot.
Immediate.
Ad she'tzeich l'regla min hashuk, which could be, in the times of the Gemara, was about a half hour after it got dark. In our days, obviously, Ad she'tzeich l'regla min hashuk is not a half hour after sunset, because we're going to stay here, we're all going to leave here around 9:45 at night, and we're going to see there's still people walking on the street, walking their dog, running the marathon, and driving their car. But there is a certain point where tzeich l'regla min hashuk. Now, tzeich l'regla min hashuk in Efrat is a lot earlier than it is in Rehovei Mikrofeim.
Or in the shuk.
No, now. Right. That's only now. That's a recent phenomenon. Right? I was on Emek Rafaim the other night at around midnight, which is very rare. Usually by 10 o'clock I'm in bed. It's like hopping. It's like hundreds of people. Every restaurant.
It's not good. Evergreen Famous lately has been kind of...
What?
Evergreen Famous have been doing so well lately, so that's because of...
I don't know. Every restaurant was still full at 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. Right? Every restaurant was still full. So you could certainly like candles. And Briskarov, Revelvel, Rabbi Soloveitchik's uncle, who lived on, like, near Rehov Strauss, has a famous tshuva, where he says, somebody asks about Techa Regal Menashuk, the deadline for lighting candles on Hanukkah. He says, well, I look out my window, and I see the Edison Theater. You know where the Edison Theater was? Edison Theater was on Rehov Strauss. Like 50 meters from Kikar Shabbat. You know what Kikar Shabbat is? Kikar Shabbat is like the center of Haredi world. 50 meters from Kikar Shabbat was the most central movie theater in Yerushalayim. What? It was not open on Shabbos. But there was a movie theater. Could you imagine them putting a movie theater there now? Because we'd be burnt to the ground before the first showing, before the first kernel got popped. So Velvo says, I look out my window, I see people are walking out of the theater, you know, like at midnight. So obviously Techa Regel Menashuk is a socially constructed deadline. But according to all opinions, there is a deadline for lighting candles. What's the deadline for making Havdalah?
Tuesday.
Right? So the Chol HaDeot, even according to the most lenient opinion about Techa Regel Menashuk, the deadline for candle lighting is first. So therefore, Tadr Vajeno Tadr should not apply, and you should light Hanukkah candles first, and then make Havdalah. Other opinions say Tadr Vishaino Tadir nor Mitzvah Overet apply here. There's a certain internal logic. Right? There's a certain order of doing things. Havdalah is clearly the last mitzvah of Shabbat. And according to all opinions, candle lighting is for the next day. It's for what begins after Shabbat is over. So there's just a logic. Obviously, you want to finish up Shabbat, and then you move on to Hanukkah candles. Right? So that kind of overrides both ideas. In practice, people do this and some people do that. Right? Some people do this and some people do that.
You can't do wrong.
What?
You can't do wrong.
Right. And according to the idea that we do light candles, light Hanukkah candles in shul, so then you've already had like a minimum pirsumenisa. So that allows Hanukkah candles at home to suffer a little bit of a delay while you make Havdalah first. So here, the question of what goes first, Rosh Chodesh, or the laying for Hanukkah. So, Mr. Herzl points out, Tadir Vishenu, oh no, I'm sorry, it's not, it's Rav Mani. But Rav Mani agreed with Mr. Herzl that Tadir Vishenu, maybe. Tadir Vishenu, Tadir Kodem, Rosh Chodesh, how often do you do Rosh Chodesh?
11 times.
Very good. 11 times. We don't do it on Rosh Hashanah.
Sometimes
12
times.
If it's Ubershana. And sometimes it's 2 days Rosh Chodesh. So, Mistabra Tadir Vishenu, Tadir Kodem. So Rosh Chodesh is more frequent than Hanukkah, so Rosh Chodesh should go first. You should learn three aliyahs for Rosh Chodesh, and then one for Hanukkah. V'omer Rabbi Avin, Kavate de Rav Dimi, Mistabra, Migaram le Revi'i. No, think about it this way. What caused there to be a fourth aliyah today?
Hanukkah?
No?
No.
Rosh Chodesh. Why are there four aliyahs? Every other day of Hanukkah, how many aliyahs do you have?
Three.
On this day you have, why is this day different than all other days? Because Rosh Chodesh. Shiavi Rosh Chodesh. Hilchach Revi'i b'Rosh Chodesh. No, the fourth aliyah should dafka be Rosh Chodesh, because that indicates the fourth aliyah is only there because of Rosh Chodesh. In other words, on Rosh Chodesh you have four aliyahs. Which of those, on a regular Rosh Chodesh, forget Hanukkah. On a regular Rosh Chodesh you have four aliyahs. Which of those aliyahs is the most Rosh Chodesh? Well, the fourth one, well, not because that's what it talks about. but because it's what distinguishes the laning from every Sheni v'Chamishi and every Hanukkah and Purim and any other day you take out a Sefer Torah. So boy, mikre, my have Allah. Rav Yosef Amar Ein Mashgichin. So why are you laning in the first place? So Rav Yosef Amar Ein Mashgichin Barosh Chodesh. No, we're not concerned with Rosh Chodesh. What? Verabba Amar Ein Mashgichin B'Chanukah. Ve'ilchasa Ein Mashgichin B'Chanukah. Rosh Chodesh is in principle Minat Torah, even though the laning is not, but Hanukkah is certainly Midrabanan. Yeah. But the Maisa, we say Rosh Chodesh goes first. I mean, that's not one of the reasons the Gemara suggests, but it argues for the precedent of Rosh Chodesh.
That's not the reason why we have four. Because we have four because of Musa. So, I mean, that's, it gets its higher status because of being the right time.
Right. The Rosh Chodesh Ikar. Rosh Chodesh is the main thing, so you do Rosh Chodesh 3 and then Hanukkah 1. Okay, we'll stop there.
So I guess 2 days of
Rosh Chodesh. So next week we will have Shi'ur,
yes.
And then everybody's going on vacation.